We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. A beautiful week in the Bay Area weather-wise, and so we're going to go outdoors in our second segment with men's tennis coach Peter Wright. They had an event on Monday, so we'll talk a little bit about that and his team for the upcoming season as well. But first, we'll start with men's basketball and head coach Mark Fox. Congratulations on the victory at Utah on Saturday night. A terrific second half. It's kind of interesting, coach. What can turn things around in the course of a season or in a week or in a game? Because you had a tough second half at Colorado and a tough first half against Utah. And yet in the second half, was probably as good a second half offensively and defensively as your team has played in a half this year, scored 50 points, held Utah to 29. What was the big turnaround at halftime?
Well, it wasn't anything more than just a commitment to the fundamental things that you have to do on every play to win. And I didn't feel like in the first half of the game that we played aggressively enough offensively. And I thought that we made some real fundamental errors defensively in that first half. And we just talked about cleaning up the little things on the defensive end and then being much more aggressive offensively. And fortunately, that worked out for us.
It worked out terrifically as you shot 58% from the field in the second half and knocking down shots. And we've talked about this before. I remember a game at Santa Clara last year when you said that the ball not going through the basket affected your team's defense. Was it the other way around this week because you shot the ball very well to start the second half and that helped translate to the defensive end as well?
You know, Todd, it could partly be that. I do think that there's a lot of truth to that statement. You know, you can get frustrated, you know, offensively and it affects your defense. And sometimes you can get hot on offense and maybe get a little bit more aggressive defensively. But I really feel like that you know the lack of continuity within our lineups has really had a impact on our ability to be you know consistent. And you know the one thing that we were able to do at Utah is just play with one player short, you know, And so we weren't totally disjointed on either end, where we had been so disjointed without sometimes three guys, you know, without Matt, Grant, and Quani at one time, we were extremely limited. But I just felt like we had a little bit more continuity. Having Grant back was I think really good for our team, because he finally returned to the Grant that we know and love and shot the ball in. And once that happened, I thought that was the biggest key. I think everyone recognized that we're almost back to being whole again, and we can just kind of play how we thought we could play all year long.
Yeah, Grant finished with 14 points, led the team in scoring, and you got performances up and down the roster. You called it a big team win afterwards, and it certainly was. One of the guys I'd like to talk about is Andre Kelly, and he's become a pretty consistent scorer for you in recent games. I think over the course of the last, you know, 5 or 6 games, you know, he's shooting around 70% from the field. Now, yeah, people will say, well, he had a couple of dunks and he's got some layups, but in that Washington game when he had 22 points, I mean, he was throwing in floaters. He had hit some jump shots. You talked earlier about him having to maybe play his way into playing shape. Is he close to being what you expected from him if he'd have had a full summer?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think he's played himself into a condition that's allowing him to be successful. Had he had an entire offseason, I think he'd be well ahead of where he is right now. You know, we didn't have that offseason, and so, you know, conditioning has been a challenge. But, you know, I think he's starting to show some explosiveness. He's improved his mobility a little bit. And, you know, if we can continue to make progress, then hopefully those things will only improve. But, you know, it's been good to see Andre finish plays. You know, I think he's accepted exactly where he can be productive, and now it's about just, you know, continuing to try and maximize those opportunities. And his teammates have to recognize that when he's open down there, we need to throw him the ball.
Yeah, the opportunities, and he's getting more opportunities now. And he's second in the league in field goal percentage at 61.5%. And in conference games, he's at 71%. The only player ahead of him, and I don't know that he'll continue to be ahead of him because he might not get enough opportunities, a guy at Arizona State, Chris Austin, who's only 12 of 15 from the field in conference play because they haven't played very many games. But Andre at 71% has been terrific. The other guy that's getting a little bit more run in recent games is Jalen Celestine. And we haven't been able to see a whole lot of him, you know, maybe in December, but now he's getting a little bit more time and give you some options at the wing position with a little bigger guy at the wing position, an athletic guy, a left-hander. Tell us a little bit more about his story, because he didn't get a chance to play last year in high school. Tell us more about Jalen.
Well, Jalen had a stress fracture in his leg last year. So he missed his senior year and then obviously the rehab that is needed, you know, once you rest and let the bone heal, the rehab that is needed after that, he essentially missed that also. And he was the last player or second to last player to return to Berkeley because of the immigration restrictions that we had with the pandemic. And so he really started behind, you know, just physically in his ability to be able to be healthy, to move. And so he's been behind, and I think you're finally seeing the fact that he's catching up. I think he's got a very bright future. He's got a versatile game, but like most freshmen, he makes errors when he's out there. But you know, he didn't have the opportunity to learn some things in the summer that he needed to learn. So he's kind of growing up on the job, if you will, but he's played well. He's had some really good plays too. Even though he's had some mistakes, he's had some really good plays. And I think we put him in a very tough situation at Colorado, just out of necessity, because we had to move him to a new position. He's having a hard enough time learning the first one, but without you know, both Grant and Quani, you know, we had to have somebody that could play the four spot. And so, you know, he drew the short straw, and I thought under the circumstances, he did an admirable job.
Yeah, I thought he did too. And it showed that he can knock down some shots. He hit a three-pointer. And so it looks like he's got a nice future, and exciting to see him play and develop, no question about it. All right, this week you've got the Southern California schools. So you got one team that you've already seen once this season. That's UCLA early December. And another team playing for the first time, that's USC. Let's talk about the initial game Thursday, 6 o'clock. will be on the air with a tip-off show beginning at 5:30. A team that is on a roll right now as they're leading the league. They're undefeated in league play. They're 7-0 overall as far as consecutive wins are concerned. So they're playing well. They're kind of an interesting team, Mark, because they're winning games. But I look at the scores, and they're winning a lot of close games. So I guess that's a good thing to do, to have the ability to close out and finish games, whether it's winning by 5, 6 points or 2 points against Utah, 3 points against Colorado at home. What do you see from UCLA now, 6 weeks after you played them the first time?
I think the advantage that UCLA has is obviously they return their starting point guard, who's just been terrific, and I think that's an area where if you can have consistent performance that's as strong as the one that he delivers, it's really an advantage to your team. And this league's got some experience and some great point guards. You go through the last few games and McKinley Wright at Colorado, Kwadi Green at Washington, Bonton at Washington State, Ethan Thompson at Oregon State. They just all have guys who've been through the wars in this league for a few years, and that's an advantage. And that's one of the things I think that is really a strength for UCLA, because he makes everybody better. And they also returned their front line from a year ago. Their team, I think, finished the year as well as anybody last year, and they return a lot of those pieces, and they really just are a sound of a team that I think this league has, because offensively their numbers are terrific. Their defensive numbers are as consistent as they've always been, and so I think they can beat you a number of ways, but I think it starts with great point guard play.
Yeah, and Tiger Campbell had a really good game against us, had a double-double in that first game at Pauley Pavilion. They will be without Chris Smith for the rest of the season. He had, I think, 21 points in the game against us at Pauley Pavilion, an all-league player, thought about going to the NBA, and unfortunate for him, suffered an ACL injury a couple of weeks ago and will be gone for the rest of the season. But it's a team that's playing well. They're playing with a lot of confidence, but they also maybe have been one of the teams that has had a lot of home games too. So now they've got to go on the road for two straight. And then they get Oregon in another week at home in a makeup game as well. And then USC on Saturday. This is a team, you talk about point guard play, they've kind of done it by committee. Ethan Anderson, their point guard, kind of a stocky, sturdy guy who makes things go. He's missed a bunch of this season, is just now coming back this past week against the Washington schools. But the one thing, when I watch them, they're just big. I mean, with the Mobley brothers, Evan Mobley, he could be one of those guys that could be not only the freshman of the year in our league, he could maybe be the player of the year in our league. Just a phenomenal talent, the number one high school recruit. What are the problems, in addition to just being so big, does USC present?
Well, they're the number one field goal percentage defensive team, I think, in the country right
now.
They
are, yep.
They have the longest team in America, and so their length to protect the rim is really something to deal with. And when you have elite talent, I mean, this kid's going to be one of the top five picks in the NBA draft. And when you have elite talent like that, you certainly, I think, can rely on the impact of those talented guys. But their length defensively and ability to protect the basket will make things really challenging. And so, I think that as we enter this week and we get ready for these games, our hope is we get healthy, that we'll have a chance to be, more and more offensive, because it's certainly impacted our offense. But these two teams are two of the top teams in their ability to finish plays as well as being good defensive teams. So, they're both off to a great start, and they're both playing really well, and we're going to have to play terrific to give ourselves chances to win.
Yes, it'll be some challenges, but opportunities Thursday and Saturday against the Bruins and against the Trojans. Also want to talk a little bit. 2 weeks ago, actually, just as we were doing our podcast, you had mentioned that one of your former players had a death in the family, and you had to deal with that, which is not an easy thing to do. It ended up being Paris Austin's mom passed away unexpectedly at a young age, and our hearts go out to Paris and his family. But They've started a GoFundMe drive. Could you tell us a little bit about how that's gone so far and how people, if they want to, can contribute to that?
Absolutely. I think that it's one of the more heartbreaking situations, you know, that I can remember. You know, Paris was out of town and he came home and discovered his mom had passed in her sleep the night before. And he's looking at, you know, an entire lifetime of responsibility and issues that he never thought he would have to manage. You know, that he wasn't sure if she owned her home, rented her home. She had a business. What was the status of the business? And you know, what they asked, you know, how should he bury his mother? Should he cremate his mother? I mean, so many decisions that are just thrust upon a young person that he probably really never thought about. And she had yet to turn 50. And so she passed at a very young age, and it was just heartbreaking. And here he had just left college and was waiting to play professionally, and all the minor professional leagues are kind of on hold. So, you know, he hasn't even had a chance to really earn a paycheck yet. So, you know, it's just was so heartbreaking because he has all this financial responsibility that's been thrust on him, a younger sister and a tragedy. And so, you know, we've had some good conversations. I think we started a repair, started a GoFundMe page with the goal of trying to, you know, pay for, you know, his mother's burial. And you know, I think that the response has been terrific. It's under his mother's name, Clarissa Jones Burial Fund is the title of the GoFundMe page. You should go to GoFundMe.com and you can find it. But it's been well received, and I think Paris is extremely thankful. His sister's thankful, and I think the burial is this week. And so it's been a hard time for Paris, but it's made me feel really good to see the Cal family wrap their arms around this young man, because he certainly loved playing at Cal, and it's just been heartbreaking to see what he's gone through.
Yeah, like I said, our hearts go out to him. And if the folks listening get a chance to help Paris and his sister out, contribute to that GoFundMe, please do so, because he's just a terrific young man. Didn't smile a lot on the court, but when he did, it just lit up a room. It was fun to see him make some game-winning shots and make some big plays and play well for the Bears over the course of 2 years. So help him out if you get the opportunity, to GoFundMe page. Hey, Coach, we appreciate your time. As always, look forward to this weekend at home against UCLA and USC. Hopefully you get Matt back this week. That'd be nice to get a little bit more firepower in the lineup as well. Have a good week of practice and the games, and we'll talk to you before the game on Thursday.
Well, I hope Matt goes back, but we're not quite there yet, but I think we're getting closer. But thank you so much. Go Bears.
Well, joining me now is a longtime head coach of the California men's tennis program, Peter Wright, whose home facility, the Hellman Center, actually was the home of Cal basketball, men's and women's, for much of the summer and the fall with the COVID restrictions. So your facility, which is an awesome facility, you know, renovated just a couple of years ago, you've been the host of a couple of different programs on campus, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right, Todd. It is kind of funny. I almost first learned about it with the photographs in the New York Times of our basketball team. I said, wait, I know that place. That's my house. You know, many of us outside of football and basketball were, you know, we weren't allowed to come into the office during the whole COVID time. So I guess I sort of wormed my way back in by volunteering to be an ambassador for checking student athletes in and staff in and taking temperatures and recording them all. So then I ended up in a funny way being down here at our tennis facility at Hellman with the basketball players, helping disinfect basketballs and all of that. So it was a, you know, it was a collaborative effort, such a tremendous amount of work put in by our whole administrative team. And I just got a chance to see it firsthand how complicated and how many protocols and challenges were faced on a daily basis. So a lot of respect for everybody, but yeah, it was amusing to see the basketball hoops up on our courts.
Of course, you mentioned the New York Times. There was a New York Times reporter embedded kind of on campus with the football team primarily, but also on campus, did a multi-part series on Cal athletics and how Cal was handling the pandemic. It was fascinating to read and what everybody had to go through. And so hopefully the worst of it is behind us. We can move forward. Your team has moved forward. You're the first non-football basketball program to actually compete since last, I guess for you, it was March the 8th, if I remember correctly. What was it like yesterday? You had that, right, I should say, on Monday against St. Mary's, you beat them 5-2.
You know, it was, Todd, it was hard to tell who was more excited, you know, the players or the coaches, but we all had such positive energy and excitement and anticipation. Some of our guys had gone through tremendous COVID protocols and quarantines and sequestering. We've learned a lot of new language about all these things. But on the day of the match, it really was exciting. I think that was really, we were brimming with it. Were we rusty? Oh, you bet. Were we, you know, missing competition? For sure. But overall, you know, it was a well played match, and so good to just be back in the saddle again. You know, we were just, everybody was just like, this is fantastic. Now, we didn't have any fans in the stands. You know, it doesn't look like we're going to have that this year, but we do have a plan. Don't tell anybody, but once basketball plays their final home game, they have all those cutouts there. We're going up to steal them and bring them down to tennis. So, you know, we'll have you know, Aaron Rodgers and Jared Goff and a lot of our tennis supporters who are up in basketball's cutouts down here in our tennis stand. So we're streaming. So hopefully people will be able to see, you know, just fans in the stands, and it'll be great for our kids.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of those up at Haas Pavilion. There's a pretty good section there, and I guess it would be the west side of and a little bit in the south side as well. So you'll have a full house, which will be nice to see, right? So
if you hear about a theft out of Haas Pavilion, if a bunch of people were stolen, you know, I guess I'll be a prime suspect.
All right, well, we got you on the record now, so we have audio evidence that you're thinking and you're planning and plotting to do something like that. When did you guys get back on campus? They start classes this week, but when did they get back to practice and kind of get together again?
Well, you know, as we followed this whole pandemic, you know, several of our guys are international. So the international travel has been problematic. It's open and closed. There's a ban. There's not a ban, you know, all of that. So we were given permission to try to get guys back right around the first of the year to help us prepare with, you know, going through the protocols, making sure everybody's safe. I mean, that's the one thing that's been, I think, quite amazing. You know, the city of Berkeley has its own health department. The Alameda County has its own, but the city of Berkeley has been probably one of the toughest. And they issued a letter to, you know, to the city of Berkeley. Hey, these things are all off with the exception of the university, because they came and visited and saw our protocols and saw what we put in place. And they said, you guys are doing it right. And so the safety of our student athletes and our staff, for that matter, was exceptional beyond what the city of Berkeley's expectations were. So I was really encouraged by that. And I think the kids were too, understanding that nobody's really gotten COVID by doing an athletic event or being inside our athletic bubble. Some have tested positive, but that was for activities that they engaged in outside of athletics. So we felt safe about it, but yeah, the first of the year kind of gave us a little bit of a runway to be ready to play St. Mary's.
Oh, that's awesome, and it's good to hear. And as we mentioned, you beat St. Mary's 5-2. You've got an experienced team. As I look at your roster, a lot of upperclassmen. Your number one player right now is Yuta Kikuchi, who 2 years ago, I guess it was the Pac-12 Freshman of the Year. Tell us a little bit about your roster and your expectations.
Well, you know, we do. We have seven guys who can graduate this May out of 11. So it's just it is an experienced group. And that's one of the things that we were comfortable about bringing them all back. They know the system. They know what to expect. They've gelled. Their chemistry is fantastic. So, you know, as we approach this year, Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, you know, we have four guys right now ranked in the collegiate top 100 in singles. And that's quite a feat. That really tells you about the depth of our program. We added a transfer player from UOP, University of Pacific. He was an outstanding freshman there And he's one of our guys now who's ranked in the top 100. So of all of our guys, there's a lot of parity. There's a lot of experience with our team. And the, you know, the challenging thing for us, like we've got Yuta Kikuchi playing one or two. You know, he played two against St. Mary's. You know, he'll play one in the next matches. So we're going to be moving guys around a little bit. We don't have a set lineup at the moment, but we've got, you know, maybe four or five guys capable of playing in the number one slot. So that's it makes me a better coach when I have that. You know, some years you maybe have five guys who can play number four, nobody who can play number one. But this year we've really got outstanding depth and experience. So, our goal is just to play match after match and be ready for the postseason. And we've got a pretty good record of doing that in the past. Yeah. And I think our guys are really motivated to take the long game approach to this.
Speaking of the game itself and games, scheduling has been problematic for everybody. You know, these spring, winter sports. And of course, the carryover from the fall sports that didn't get a chance to participate as well. Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do to put a schedule together.
Well, it's timely that you asked that question, because about 15 minutes ago, I got off the phone with a school that we were scheduled to play, and they're flying in from out of state, and they called to say we can't make it. So I've had so many iterations of the schedule so far. Our administration has been incredibly supportive of what's going on. They know that every school is handling it differently. We saw that in football around the country. You know, we're seeing it in all of our sports. So we're taking it at, you know, one day at a time. I notify 17 people on our staff every time there's a schedule change. And I think they're all, you know, up to their eyeballs and making sure they get the latest scheduling information. But yeah, we have a pretty solid schedule there. The Pac-12 has been very active in helping us set the schedule in our conference matches. And I feel confident with that. Our conference championships is also pretty well set. So it's the stuff we do around that, all the different protocols that we have in place. But we're looking, and I think most of the sports are looking to keep costs down, to keep play regional, you know, but to also give our student athletes the opportunities to qualify for the NCAA championships, because it doesn't make sense to play but not play at a high enough level where you can't qualify for the NCAAs. And you know, we've done that. We've been in the NCAAs the last 20 years in a row, which, you know, our guys take tremendous pride in, and also just performing well at the end of the season. So our administration's been supportive. I believe we have a schedule now that will allow us to qualify for the NCAAs. And then when we do that, then it's all on us from there.
No question about it. And that'll be later in the spring. And hopefully by there'll be some vaccinations involved, and we'll be much farther along in this process than maybe we are at this current moment. You mentioned streaks, Peter, and a streak that I'd like to talk about, and I'm sure you will as well, is your academic success rates. The entire athletic department back in, I think it was maybe October, I can't remember when they came out with one of the reports, and certainly back in May when we had, the APR reports. I mean, you're at the head of the class here as far as consecutive streaks of 1,000 in graduation and so forth. What's been the key to doing that?
You know, we have a little bit of a philosophy about how we do what we do around here. And I tell guys in the recruiting process and while they're here, look, this is one of the best educations you can get in the world. And if you don't take advantage of that, then you're not smart enough to be here. So, you know, we really work with our guys to perform with excellence on the tennis court, off the tennis court, and in the classroom. I mean, you know, I look at them as three different areas, you know, really. We play and perform our sport to a high level. We're in the classroom, and then we're also in life and how we prepare. And I think that's one of the things that we take great pride in that. I have to say, my good friend Kent Newmark, Kent and Pat, our stadium court is named Newmark Stadium Court, and I was on the phone with him just the other day, and I said, Kent, one of the smartest things you ever did, I said, I'd like to say it was naming stadium court here at the tennis facility, but one of the smartest things you ever did was to come up with the Newmark Award for academics for all of our teams, because they've come up with this award that has a financial component. So that, you know, there's a little bit of cash on the line for all of our teams. And different teams win. I think five different teams win it every year, from big sport to small sport. But anyway, we love that. I love that idea. And so that's also one of the things that we take great. I think Kent reminded me, he says, you've won this award more than anybody else. Yeah. But then he also told me, but last year you didn't win it. So we're looking to get back on that trophy case as well.
Well, you've done a tremendous job in that area, and the athletic department, you know, four straight years of increases is wonderful. That's great to see on the entire athletic department scale. You also have a couple of new assistants on your staff that bring phenomenal experience to the table. You got Horacio Mata, whose son Gunther played for you, and Horacio has been a tremendous coach. He's coached, you know, Olympians. He's coached Grand Slam champs. So he's your experienced guy. And then you've got kind of a younger guy that's, I don't know if he's a grad assistant or a volunteer assistant. I'm not sure what the term is, Peter, but Rajiv Ram, who is the reigning or one of the reigning doubles champs in the next Grand Slam tournament, the Australian Open, which starts next month down in Melbourne. I mean, talk about those two guys and what they bring to your program.
Well, you know, it's Tyler Brown was in our program, and he was our associate head coach for 10 years. He huge shoes to fill. And so we missed him. But when we went to hire, you know, it really we had to hit it out of the park. And we did, you know, really Horacio Mata and Rajiv Ram. They are two of the first of all, they're great human beings. Their encyclopedic knowledge of the sport. Horacio has, as you say, he has a coaching resume that is phenomenal. And so he brings so much experience to the table. I just every day I get to work with him. I was joking with him because, you know, we hired him back in June and neither one of us could come to campus. So I said, look, you haven't done anything yet. You know, what are you doing? But just super excited to be out here on the courts. And he just, he has a story every day talking about the tour and all the different players, Andy Roddick, all the players, some that he coached, some that he was associated with, some from the Olympics. And our guys are just, I mean, that's my job, is to give our guys the best opportunity to grow as tennis players and as people. And Horacio just brings so much to that table. And then you add to that Rajiv, you know, and Rajiv Ram is, he's number two doubles team in the world, Grand Slam champion, multiple times. The funny part about him, he's already left to go to Australia to play in the Australian Open, but he is, he's not a young guy. He's an old guy. His doubles acumen is phenomenal, but what my guys don't understand is, you know, they think of Rajiv as a doubles guy, right? The guy mm-hmm. won the Australian Open. And I'm like, no, he's won like five singles titles on the tour, but he's old now, so he can't really play singles at the same level. So he squeezed another 3-4 years out of his career by transitioning to doubles only. And so they just think of him as a doubles guy. And I'm like, nah, Rajiv's won a few matches in singles, fellas. Yeah. And he's amazing too. And I think, you know, for us to have that level of skill, that level of experience, and to have our guys to have that exposure is, you know, really second to none. I don't think there's I don't think there's a better coaching staff like that. There's not a similar one around the country, and they really are engaged. I mean, Horacio is here every day. Rajiv is, you know, comes and goes, you know, how he's doing in the tournaments. But the other thing about Rajiv, he wants to be a head coach in college when he's retired from the tour, and he's, you know, he's won the NCAAs, you know, when he was in college as well. So. We're so fired up to come to work. I mean, you know, we don't even need coffee to get us started each day. We're fired up and our guys are fired up. So, it's exciting times around our tennis program and around our athletic department.
Yeah, Rajiv and his doubles partner are, I think, the fifth seed going into the tournament. They had qualifying for the Australian Open last week, I think, in Qatar. And then they had to give him 2 weeks to get to Australia so that they can quarantine before they start the tournament the 8th of February. Speaking of, let's maybe real quickly on the professional level, on the men's side, you know, for a decade now, it's been dominated by three guys. Okay. And those three guys, Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer, and they've all surpassed Pete Sampras, who we thought at the time was, you know, going to hold that title as being the greatest Grand Slam champion of all time. Those guys have all blown by him. And now you've got those three that have dominated tennis. Federer is not going to play in the Australian. Djokovic and Nadal scheduled 1-2 seeding. Well, where's the next group of, you know, maybe Americans coming from? Do you see some Americans on the horizon that in a year or two, maybe 3 or 4 years, might be able to take the mantle from those guys? Because eventually they're all going to retire. Okay. It might seem like they'll play forever, but eventually they're going to retire. What do you see in U.S. tennis?
Well, you know, it's a great question, because right now it's been a little bit, where is American tennis, and why is it not in, you know, we just don't have the same exposure at the top of tennis that we have traditionally had for the last, forever almost.
Forever, yeah.
You know, we've got some young guys, Francis Tiafoe is one who comes to mind. I think that the style of tennis, it's changed a little bit, and it kind of, there's an ebb and a flow to it. It's very difficult to predict. I would love to see America. You know, there have been times when we've had 5-6 Americans almost in the top 10, but that hasn't happened in a while. You know, Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, they've just been so incredibly dominant. Andy Murray in there as well. But I do think that with the cycles of the sport, the Americans will be back and playing well. I hope to see that coming out soon. You know, college tennis has had a role in that over the years, where a lot of the top guys have. You know, John Isner, for example, one of the last guys to play college and be in the top 10 in the world. But we don't have that at the moment. You know, so I agree with you. I think that's a that's an area that will be interesting to see. And also talking about the Australian Open, Todd, the just this time last year, Martin Luther King's birthday, we had our men's and women's teams in Australia, and we attended the first day. We were at the qualifying, and then we attended the first day of the Australian Open. So it was a huge trip for all of us to go and see and support some of our Cal Bears on the men's side and the women's side, who were playing in the Australian Open. Ben McLaughlin, who's in the top 100 in doubles, Andre Göransson. We've got a lot of guys, and obviously Rajiv as well. He wasn't quite on the staff yet. I was illegally recruiting him to join us. But no, it's fantastic to see our former Cal players in the pros and attending the Grand Slams. But that was clearly one of the highlights for our men's and women's teams last year, was being at the Australian Open on center court, watching some incredible play.
Yeah, that's one of the stops on the bucket list my wife and I have, is the four Grand Slams and a couple of other things as well. But want to get to Melbourne. I've been to Sydney, haven't been to Melbourne, and looking forward to that opportunity. And we're looking forward to another great year from your squad, Peter, who you've won more than, you know, right around 60% of your matches over the years. That's phenomenal in college athletics. 60% is a great, and, you know, coach of the year a couple of times and doing a terrific job academically as well. We appreciate your time. Hopefully the tennis courts will be used strictly for tennis from here on out and not all the other sports, but congratulations on the win over St. Mary's and good luck the rest of the season.
Todd, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to see you and hear your voice. You are a legend here. So I appreciate that and look forward to some bright days ahead for all of us.
You got it. Thanks a lot, Peter. Appreciate it.
Go Bears.
Go Bears. All right. Thanks to Mark Fox for being with us. The Bears at home this week against UCLA Thursday night, 6 o'clock. We'll be on the air at 5:30 with the tip-off show. USC in town Saturday for a 5 o'clock start. So for Peter Wright, Mark Fox, and myself, Todd McKim, thank you very much for joining us once again. And as always, go Bears.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.